spreading their message to millions. Spreading their message to millions. Kiss Talk. Talking Kiss. Kiss fans and Kiss podcast. With your host, Mike from Nashville. Tuck Watts. And special guest, it could even be you. Now here they are, your Kiss Talk crew.
All right, everybody, welcome to Kiss Talk. We're back this week. This would be, I guess, like episode 8. Not really doing episodes, but I am, I guess. So it's all about kind of getting on here and just kind of talking and talking about what's going on with the band. Tuck, you're back with me this week, and I'm glad to see it, man. What's going on?
Hey, man, I'm actually feeling a little better, even though this is cold.
You sound really good, actually.
It's been hard to kick this thing. I never get sick, and I've been sick like for a month.
Yeah, that's horrible. That's some bad stuff.
But luckily here in the South, you know, we're back down to a polar vortex or something, and it's like going to be 3 degrees in the morning. So, but by the weekend it'll be 80.
Yeah, hopefully. I need it to be back around that somewhere.
So, I mean, Nashville's going through the same thing, right? It's still cold. It's cold there, too.
Yeah,
right?
It's like super cold, man.
And rain? Holy. I mean, we've got so much rain here in Georgia and Tennessee.
Yep.
I saw a thing on Facebook. It said it's only rained twice this winter, once for 45 days and once for 38 days.
That's pretty much got it, man.
Holy moly. All right. Well, hey, but Kiss, things are great in the Kiss world. You went to Chicago.
I did. So last time we talked, it was like last Friday. It was the night of the Milwaukee show. They blew it out in Milwaukee. Went to Chicago. It was killer. So one thing I think I would say that is really, as far as what's Kiss news since then, is just the fact that these guys, I think they've hit their stride, right? I mean, the tour is in full motion. Everything is, you know, working the way it's supposed to. And the reviews just keep coming in from the local media every time they play a city. You know, it's the greatest show on earth. I saw that comment. You know, the show's incredible. You got to go see it. So I'm really thrilled at the local media feedback. That we keep seeing get posted the day after every single show. So yeah. I think that's really cool.
There was one that I posted on the Kiss Talk page, and it had a lot of really cool videos in it, a lot of really nice pictures. I can't remember if that may have been from Kansas City or somewhere, but it was really nice.
Yep. So I think the other thing, and I haven't really been posting these, but Julian Gill at Kiss FAQ seems to have the great access to the Polestar figures, and he posts these things. And man, it is. I think we commented on this. It is. They're nailing it, man. Just within a few hundred of a sellout, or it's sold out. Chicago was sold out. I think that got announced first thing Saturday morning that they were out of tickets. And I love what. You know, getting to go to these different venues, some of these venues I've never even been to see a show. And, you know, you drive up to the United Center in Chicago. They're running the big sign outside with, you know, Kiss is here on the big digital sign. You go into the arena. They have a gigantic digital sign. And I'm talking, it's like, I don't know, 60 feet long by 12 feet high. And it's got Kiss on it, and of course they're running other advertisements on it as well. But you know, it feels like a real experience again, kind of like it used to back when we were young.
Yeah, well, and I think one of the things that's helping is these are arenas; these aren't the sheds, right? They're playing 20,000 seat arenas. I'm assuming United Center is 20,000.
It's anywhere from 11 to about 20. Yeah,
I'm sure for a concert seating, I'm sure it's probably 15 to 20. But yeah, so you know when they're playing in a shed, it doesn't. I don't know. Those kind of shows have a different kind of feel to them. But yeah, I think these arena shows are pretty cool. And now the painter is not at every show.
That's correct. So you just covered two things there. One is you talked about the size of the arena. And one of the things that I've been curious about seeing the Polestar numbers is, you know, they're not selling seats behind the stage. So when it says capacity is 12,151 and they sold 11,962, does that mean that have they compensated for the seats behind the stage?
Okay. Yeah, I think they do compensate for that stuff.
All right.
You know, most arenas have, if I'm not incorrect here, but I think most arenas like that have a setup chart. If you remember the Omni in Atlanta, you know, they used to do like the half house Omni.
Right.
Right. But they didn't count all the seats in the Omni. They would just hang that curtain down the middle and then it was just half the arena.
Yep. I do remember that quite often. So, and then let's see, what was the second thing you said there?
About the painter.
Yeah. So I got to see the painter for the first time in Chicago because I haven't landed.
So you've seen him four times, three times.
Yeah, I've seen him three times and twice without the painter.
Okay.
So, you know, my experience was great. I get to see the painter tonight. I had heard and watched on YouTube what the painter did mildly. But I think at the first few shows he was at, you know, he had painted like Hendrix, Freddie Mercury, and then did the Kiss photo. And on Chicago, you know, this is kind of like his second go-round of dates he's kind of connected on. He did Angus Young and Elton John. And then the four Kiss. And
it was like Angus Young on the Highway to Hell album.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And very cool. I mean, you know, he's got his little method that he does, and he dances around, slaps paint everywhere. You know, it takes a couple minutes for it all to come together. But when they're all done, I mean, they're pretty cool, I have to admit. I mean, I like the Kiss one particularly, of course.
So they're showing this on the big screens too, right?
Yeah.
So
you
have a good view of what's going on.
You do, yeah. And he's got, you know, for the first two, he has relative music to the artist playing while he's painting. But for Kiss,
Chad Gibson,
he does not have Kiss music playing. He has like some kind of original arrangement. So, I'm assuming he does that because Kiss is going to play later and you don't want to overexpose Kiss music, I suppose. So, whatever. But I did enjoy it. I liked it. Now that I've seen it, it's kind of like, I get it. I've enjoyed the shows, quite honestly, without an opener, but I would enjoy it more if they would just start earlier. Because they're still not starting to 8:45 or 9 o'clock even, which doesn't make sense to me.
So how long is the painter on stage?
Probably a good 30 minutes. So
interesting.
Yeah. And I thought he would start at 7:30 and he didn't. He started like at 8:15 or 8:30 or somewhere way up there. So yeah,
The doors opened at 7. Your ticket said 7:30.
Yeah, it said the show was going to start at 7:30. So my assumption was the painter would come on. And then I think the schedule that I've seen is painter comes on at 7:30, Kiss comes on at 8:45. But none of that has ever been correct. I mean, Kiss is on at 9 or even after a few minutes. So I think their meet and greets may be running them a little late. Which is, I think, originally what they wanted to avoid.
Yeah.
So I don't know how that's going to work out or if they're going to continue doing it like that. They may just continue it through this leg of the tour, which ends in Birmingham in April.
But, so is there any word, what's the painter doing with the paintings after the show?
So my understanding is they're auctioning those off for charity. Now, what I'm unclear on, I had heard that, I've only heard like one figure was like $9,000. Somebody else had said, oh no, they're like 15 or something. So what I'm unclear on, is that just for like the Kiss painting, or was that for all three paintings, you know, at one time?
And these are quite, I mean, for a painting, these are large paintings.
Yeah, they're probably 6 feet tall and maybe 6 feet wide.
Okay.
So, and the Kiss one is actually longer than it is tall.
Yeah, I think he does like a group shot, right?
Yeah, he does all four of the faces. So, and, you know, I'm always a perfectionist with the pictures of Kiss, where it should always be Paul, Gene, you know, Eric and Tommy, because that's traditionally the way that Kiss photos were always done, but he doesn't do it that way. He does it like Tommy, Paul, Gene, Eric.
Puts him in the center. Now, this isn't one of those things where he sort of paints it and it's upside down and then he turns it and you see it.
Well, he does. One of them he paints upside down. So my understanding is on the Jimi Hendrix one, on the first few shows was upside down, and on my show, Elton John was upside down.
Okay. And you're like, I don't have no idea what this is until right at the end.
Well,
but the music's playing.
The music kind of gives it away. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so. But anyway.
Interesting. Still would have been kind of cool with Cheap Trick.
Well, yeah, you're right. I mean, it wouldn't have been bad. But anyway, I don't mind it. It gives you social time. You certainly get to talk to all the people around you. Unless you don't want to. But
what if it was Rick Nielsen painting pictures?
Is he throwing pics at the same time?
Yeah, maybe so. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe he's painting guitar picks and just throwing them. You paint one, throw it.
Now, he would probably do that. Yes, he would put paint on it and fling it just to see if it stuck to somebody.
You would get home and you'd realize, oh, wait. What is that? Oh, got a guitar pick stuck to me.
Yeah. So as far as different things with the show, I don't know that there's nothing really different. I did notice that this show that I didn't notice before, and apparently it has been there before, and I just haven't noticed it. But Sam T. Serpent, on his left wing, the red glass or plastic is broken out on one portion of it, as if somebody smacked it somewhere along the way since the first show and broke it. At first I thought, well, apparently it got broken between Milwaukee and Chicago or somewhere, but I looked back at some other pictures and it's broken in those pictures as well. So it's already suffering some road damage and it hadn't even left the country yet. So
now there's also a thing that I've seen some people talking about online, is that some of the pyro at the open is different. Something about there's pyro that streaks across the rafters or something.
So when I was in Vegas, I felt like I saw a random shot go more out towards the risers, where it looked like, wow, that looked dangerous. Now, that was when I was in the back of the arena. I haven't really noticed anything like that, because I've been closer up the last couple of shows. So I don't know if they've corrected that or if it was just my vantage point.
Yeah.
But it sure looked like when I was in Vegas that one went wild off to the left side, because I didn't see one matching it going off to the right side. So I don't know. It could have been a fluke. You know, you never know. I mean,
well, you know, and these places have different size ceilings. You know, there's probably some stuff you can't do in some arenas that, well, we can do it here.
Yeah. The, you know, I said it, I think I said before, Memphis, you know, Tommy's rockets didn't fire on the third of the fourth one that he does. But everything was, of course, in working order last time I saw it. But I do think they're getting more comfortable with everything that's kind of going on, and everybody kind of knows their role. Gene and Tommy have a lot of play time, it seems like. Paul seems to be happy with everything that's kind of going on. Gene left out a couple of lyrics on God of Thunder while he was elevated above everybody. And the second time it happened, you could kind of see Paul just kind of smiled as he walked up to the mic to sing the background part where there was no verse before it. So I think he just kind of like, that's Gene up there. You know?
Yeah. Well, and you know, it's always amazing to me, you know, he spits blood, then they do God of Thunder, right?
Yes.
And, you know, you got all this crap in your mouth.
Yeah.
And you're trying to sing God of Thunder because he obviously, there's an effect he does with his own voice, not just with the microphone, right? I mean, yeah. He sings it a different way.
Yeah.
You know, there's got to be some nights where that just gets in the wrong.
It could. So.
Yeah, I don't, you know, and he already has said many times he hates heights. Yeah. So, I mean, there's a recipe for disaster there, but whatever.
Yeah, I watched him after he did the fire thing, and he really, really rinsed his mouth out like I'd never seen him do it before. So, I've seen him, you know, take a quick drink of water and then spit. He spits all over the stage. I mean,
right.
I just happened to notice that it seemed like there was more of that going on at that particular show than previous ones. Or I'm getting now where I'm just starting to really be able to look around and keep track of stuff. And there are little things that I want to remember, to watch for. It's, like at the end, I think it's going into Black Diamond. Maybe, or Do You Love Me? It's Do You Love Me, actually. They put, this is the only time I recognize this happening during the whole show, is they put individual colored spotlights on each member. So, like, Gene's is red, Paul's is purple, Tommy's is blue, and Eric's is green. And it's just like kind of a shout-out to Dynasty right there.
Right.
Right? So, because, I mean, it's when you're looking at the whole stage and it's, all at once, you go, wow, that's cool. That's a shout out right there. Because nowhere else do they actually reference those colors at one time like that. So it's really cool. But I kind of feel like that, I think Paul really did sit down on this thing and go, okay, at this point in the show, you know, it's just like you go to the Eric playing Beth at the piano and them coming out kind of doing the old Paul Lynn thing where they all, you know, stand around the piano for a second. I really do think that Paul sat down through this show and kind of goes, let's do this right here. That'll kind of shout out to this. I just wonder how many of those things that I haven't picked up on yet. You know, was it Paul that decided to bring in Sam T. Serpent as kind of a shout out, you know, for Gene, for that era? I just got to keep looking for those. And then I'd love to ask Paul that question. Are all these things intentional? Or is this just a fluke? Or did Tommy come up with all this to you know, reference these other, you know, special
times? Just a random just collaboration of just things.
Yeah.
Hey, we're bringing back the serpent. We're going to do this. We're going to do that.
Yeah. It's just, it's kind of cool. But anyway, just got to keep looking for them. But anyway.
So the set list staying pretty much the same.
It is. After the drop of Hide Your Heart and the slide in of Calling Dr. Love, that's been the last one, I guess.
Right.
And we'll kind of see. I mean, they did that after, what, about 10 shows? So we'll let them get through a few more here and see if they randomly change something else up.
Right. And on our last episode, we talked about how at the Starwood Whiskey show, they didn't play Rock and Roll All Night. David Cathy corrected us. Online.
Thank you, David.
It was the Blaze Fest that they didn't play Rock and Roll All Night.
Right. Yep.
Not the Weenie Rock. Or the Weenie Roast. Or K-Rock Weenie Roast or the Weenie Rock.
Whatever it is, yeah.
Whatever.
So, but that's another point, and I meant to mention it earlier. We talked about how KISS shows lose their effectiveness in sheds, in open amphitheaters. So the people that I met in Chicago, they came over from Indianapolis area or Indiana area. Ben Irving, and shout out to Ben. You know, his wife mentioned that she got a ticket to go see him in Indiana at what's going to be the amphitheater show in August, I think it was, and. she said, you know, I think I might have made a mistake, number one, because it's going to be hot outside. But number two, I think maybe she realized that Kiss is so much better in a dark room than they are in an open field, so to speak. And mm-hmm. I've always said that. I say that about any shows. I've never been a fan of amphitheater shows because any bands that have any kind of lighting entertainment package, it loses its effectiveness. It just doesn't work as well as when you can completely shut out the lights in a gigantic room. The effect that, and all the money they spend on what the stage looks like is, you know, pays off. But in an amphitheater, you just don't get that. It's like, you know, the beams of light basically go out to nowhere. And you have all the backlighting of the amphitheater that's out in the, you know, pedestrian areas. So, I don't know. I would prefer to never see Kiss, certainly, in an amphitheater. But very few shows am I interested in seeing, unless it's a band that doesn't have a show and you're just there strictly for the music. So,
yeah. Well, I was going to say, I think, you know, Kiss without the makeup was fine in amphitheaters.
Yeah.
I think it does work better with the makeup on.
The Crazy Nights tour was very colorful. I thought it was, you know, I thought it was cool because you had the giant logo and you had all the neon colors kind of things kind of going on. And I don't know.
Right.
I've just always kind of preferred that. But all right. But so
amphitheaters are kind of going away, right? I mean, the one in Nashville's gone. Well, they built a new one, right?
Well, they build many amphitheaters now. It's like the Ascend here. It's 7,500 people. So a band like Kiss is not even going to play there. And when a band like Journey does play there, tickets are $350 because they still got their minimum fee that they're going to take to play. So it's a great venue, but you have those issues. And it seems like, just looking ahead at this summer, it seems like a lot of the acts that have been booked at that venue are not A-level acts like they have been in the past. So, and I'm sure other markets have the same scenario. I mean, they've got these smaller amphitheaters, and they're actually building another amphitheater outside of Nashville, which is going to compete with the one downtown.
Right, yeah, in Atlanta, you know, you've got the one in Alpharetta.
Yeah.
Of course, you've always had Chastain Park.
Right.
Which is a great place to see a show, I think.
So, yeah.
But anyway, we're getting off track, I think.
Yeah, I don't know that we have a track.
It's been said.
The great thing about this show, we can do whatever we want. We have no format other than talking about Kiss, and that's an easy one. But yeah, for our first time, because I don't think I've really introduced an actual topic of the week, so to speak, to take a line from Podcast Rock City. But I was kind of thinking about this. I actually got a couple things I throw around in my head all the time about, man, I'd like to just throw that out there. So the thing I'm going to throw at you this week, because in case y'all don't know, I don't ever tell Tuck what the subject is, because I like the spontaneity that Tuck has to come up with answers for crap.
As a matter of fact, I was prepared to talk about Duran Duran today. You told me this was Duran Duran talk, and we haven't even talked about them yet.
Well, do you like Rio or Hungry Like a Wolf?
You know, I think the earlier, raw Duran Duran would be more appealing to me.
Okay.
Really? I was the one that went to see Culture Club, all right? So
that's true. Actually, that's funny. I did see Culture Club. And it's funny that Joe Polo just mentioned that he saw Culture Club, too, back in the 80s. That's kind of funny, actually, on the last podcast. So they were talking about what actual bands were that you're into and how does it relate to the fact that you like Kiss. And his statement would be, I guess, a lot like mine. Initially, I was more into pop music. I mean, I listened to the top 40, and then my sister started getting me into the progressive stuff before that. But my taste, you know, was all over the place. So, but I don't know.
Well, it was a different time, too. We've talked about that before, how, you know, the music was a little more fluid. I mean, you could be into Kool and the Gang and, you know, Foreigner. It wasn't so segregated. You could like the Commodores and love Lynyrd Skynyrd.
Yeah.
So anyway, back to the topic of the week.
Yep, topic of the week. It's kind of a strange one. So most people talk about, well, I got off the Kiss train at certain points, right?
Right.
There were those discussions. Well, you know, I kind of went absent, or I kind of gave up on the band, and then I came back around later, or whatever. So the albums that most people mention, I think, are two that dominate the subject, or dominate that topic. But I think there were four, if you really break it down a little bit. So if you ask kind of the early Kiss fans, they say, well, I got off the train at Dynasty, man. I was just, I couldn't handle it. I was done. Right?
Right.
So, and then I think you kind of get people that say, well, no, I made it through that, but I had to get off the train at the Elder. Now, for me, I never actually got off the train. And well, I'll kind of talk through that as we talk through this. But if you kind of dissect and you have really deep conversations about this, there were people that got off the train at Destroyer, right? Because Destroyer was a complete, to me, Destroyer was just as much of a change as the Elder, in my opinion, to the people that were around for the previous albums. I mean, that's the way that I see it. I don't see going to Dynasty being as much of a change as it was going to Destroyer.
Okay.
So I don't know. What do you think about that?
So here's what I think. I think, you know, especially at the time, you know, when Alive hit, there really wasn't a lot of Kiss fans.
Right.
All right. Alive hits, the fan base that was generated when Alive became a hit was probably not, it wasn't, they weren't Kiss fans so much as they were fans of music, hard rock, arena rock, whatever you want to call it at that point in time, right? Those people were listening to Frampton, they were listening to Ted Nugent, they were listening to those bands, all right? So I don't think Destroyer, as different as it was, yeah, it turned off some people, probably, but I think the newer fans, the fans that got on board mainly with Kiss Alive, I don't think it was really that different for those people, and that sort of propelled them on to Rock and Roll All Night, Rock and Roll Over, and Love Gun, and I think that's why they maintained that popularity. Of course, Beth helped, because who did that appeal to? It didn't appeal to the people that were listening to, you know, Ted Nugent. It would appeal to the people that were top 40 fans that had come on board during the Alive, right? Does that make sense?
It does. So you believe that the people that came on board jumped on the train as a result of Kiss Alive, because Kiss Alive was basically a mechanism that elevated Kiss to a point where you had one guy buying it, and his buddy heard it, and his buddy heard it. And so now you got all these fans that are listening to Kiss Alive. They're going out and buying Kiss Alive. They're now on the Kiss train. But so when they start hearing the songs that are so polished and produced from Destroyer after hearing all the rawness of Kiss Alive and maybe even going back and buying those early albums, you think that continued to propel those people because of Detroit Rock City and King of the Nighttime World?
Well, I think that, but I think the majority of them probably were not, how do I say this? You know how, so top 40 music or popular music in America, it's a very finicky crowd. We already talked about how you could be into the Commodores and like Culture, you know, what culture club, or like you could like the Commodores and like the Doobie Brothers.
Right.
So I think those people that came on board when, you know, maybe, you know, they were at their peak. Hey, have you heard Kiss? People are going to, you know, in the '70s, they were checking that out. They were going in, hey, no, it was the cool thing to like Kiss in 1976, 75, whenever Alive, you know, that wave was coming. That's actually when I started listening to Kiss. My sister brought in Alive, and I couldn't, you know, I couldn't escape it. Right. I still have that record. But I think those people, there was enough on Destroyer to keep those people. And there was also enough to appeal to the rocker guys. Yeah, okay, I'm skipping Great Expectations. Okay. I'm probably listening to Beth because my girlfriend wants to. Because Beth, while it is different, it's short. It really was a cool song, I think. I don't remember any of our friends that we kind of came up with, and we weren't friends at the time, but I don't remember people turning Kiss off because of Beth. Beth was a plus.
Yeah, it added to the fan base, certainly. And you look at the tracks on Destroyer, Shout It Out Loud actually gets some radio airplay. Beth got some radio airplay, obviously.
Shout Out Loud was the first single.
But Detroit Rock City, King of the Nighttime World, God of Thunder, I mean, you get into the others, at Flaming You, Sweet Pain, Do You Love Me. Those were not releases. But yet, Detroit Rock City became a song that got played on the radio forevermore. So maybe you're right. Maybe, I mean, I guess those songs kind of carried that album and brought in a new group of fans. Then I kind of look at, okay, yeah, Rock and Roll Over and Love Gun. What? Those are great rock albums, but not mainstream rock albums. I don't know. I just kind of look at that and I go, because the singles off of Rock and Roll Over that had any chartable success was Dr. Love and Hard Luck Woman.
Right? So I'm trying to think, is there a band that you came on board late and then went back and checked out earlier albums? I'm trying to think of a band like that
for me.
Zeppelin?
Yeah. Because I wasn't into Zeppelin at all until the late 70s. And not
so
that I was
into
them.
So which album did you pick up?
Led Zeppelin 3 would have been my first Zeppelin album.
Okay.
And that was, I didn't get that until like 78 or 79.
So that was years later.
That was some time after they probably had, what, five, six albums out by then.
Right.
So that's when I kind of started going backwards. And, you know, Zeppelin and Hendrix both would have been that type of scenario for me.
So I think my point is that at Kiss Alive, okay, if that's your first album, I don't know that – I think you're going into Destroyer not really understanding what to expect.
Okay, I get it.
And so I don't think it was that big a deal. Whereas when Dynasty hit, you had sort of a template, right? By that time, those people at Dynasty had went back and they were listening to Hotter Than Hell. They were listening to Dressed to Kill. They were listening to Kiss. There was more of a pattern set. And so I think that's why Dynasty is seen as a bigger departure than Destroyer.
Okay. Because people couldn't get past the fact of the leadoff single. That's the only reason.
And the production. But yeah, I mean, X-Ray Eyes, there's a lot of rock on there that could have been produced very differently and sounded crunchier.
And it still sounded great. I mean, I don't know. I didn't, when I heard I Was Made for Loving You, I didn't get a negative feeling about it. I thought, yeah, okay, I get it. Of course, I also bought the album the day it came out.
Right.
And I'm immediately listening to 2000 Man and X-Ray Eyes and Magic Touch. And, you know, I'm recognizing the album as a whole, not as a single. So I guess that's where I kind of look at it. And it wasn't that big a departure for me. Now, I also have to say that if I back up, I wasn't old enough to be the guy that came aboard on Alive and then had to go by Destroyer, and all of a sudden I'm hearing a very heavily produced, you know, product. For me, that effect would have been the older. Right. Because if, like so many people, you know, I hear, well, yeah, I went and bought the elder, and I was just so surprised. I had no idea this is what I was going to listen to. But for me, I mean, I've still got the magazines upstairs in storage. I remember buying the magazines leading up to that album, and all the interviews were very clear that this was going to be a concept album. It was going to be very different. I remember it saying, this is us, you know, so I expected something totally different. Now, was it much more different than I thought it was going to be? Yeah, it was. But I never hated it. I never went, oh, man, I'm never listening to that again.
Yeah, I don't think I ever hated it. But we also, and they changed the track listing, right, so that it would start off with The Oath. Right, the U.S. release started off with The Oath. I know the cassette that I had when I first got it had The Oath first.
Yeah.
And that's out of order, but they did that because somebody said, there's no way you can start off with Just a Boy or whatever the song was they start off with.
Yeah.
Which makes sense, because had you heard that first, you might have went, wait a minute, what?
You're right, mate. Maybe that is the case.
But instead, it's and you're like, okay, it's a little different, but okay, heck yeah, this is heavy.
Yeah. That's true. It could have been different, I guess. So.
And again, like you said, we were listening to the albums. We weren't the fans that were fair weather fans. We were taking in Kiss as a whole. We had the card. We had the, you know, the stuff, you know, that we could get at that time. I mean, there really wasn't a whole, Kiss was merchandise, but it really wasn't saturation like it is now. And maybe it was the fact that, you know, I had money that I got from mowing yards and I couldn't afford to buy, you know, a ton of stuff. Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So we were taking in the whole idea of Kiss. We weren't the fans that maybe just understood, you know, Kiss was Beth. They were Hard Luck Woman. They were Dr. Love. Just the singles or the songs that maybe we were hearing, the more popular songs.
Right.
We had a different vision of Kiss than maybe a mainstream music fan would have had.
I agree. So, all right. So we've established that maybe Dynasty and the Elder are the two bigger departures.
Right.
But the fourth one, which should be fairly obvious, would be Carnival of Souls. Because after everybody spoke their love for Revenge, the next thing you get is a total twist of Carnival of Souls, which, you know, if I had to pick one Kiss album out of every one of them from the day that I was able to buy new albums, you know, because like I said, my story is unique. I got all the albums up to Love Gun in one day, because my dad worked at a record store. He made a deal with me, and he brought me home all those albums at once. So I immersed myself in original Kiss all at one time.
And let's be clear on that deal. You are still mowing the grass every week, right?
That's correct. But so when I first heard, what was the original title of Carnival of Souls? Was it Head or was it?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah. So, of course, it came out, you know, basically it was available to all of us via bootleg months before
maybe. Yeah, well, originally, you know, it wasn't going to come out.
Yeah.
I mean, it was just going to be shelved and it was never going to see the light. And I think fans sort of said, no, wait, we want to hear it. Yeah. And it would have been bootlegged so much.
Right. So it came out as the Final Sessions with a crappy album cover. So I remember hearing that for the first time, as opposed to hearing Unholy for the first time on Headbangers Ball. I about fell out on the floor because I thought that was the most evil that Gene had ever been in his career.
I was going to say that was a departure.
Yeah, I
because
thought
coming out of Hide Your Heart and Forever and Rise to It, you hear Unholy, and especially after Eric's death, you know, it was like, holy smokes.
To me, that was more of an evolution. I saw them evolve into... I saw them evolve out of the neon 80s, finally, into, okay, what do we look like now in the 90s?
Well, and we talked about that. And that happened sort of halfway through the Hits tour, the Hot in the Shade tour.
Yeah.
Right.
Yep. So, but when I put on Carnival, so it was, you know, the first song. I mean, it was like, have I ever gotten this feeling before putting the needle on a, whether it was cassette at the time, probably, because I don't, maybe that thing came out on CD on bootleg. I can't remember. Anyway.
I had a bootleg cassette of it.
That's what I was thinking. The bootlegs that were going around were cassettes. That's the first time I got a feeling of, I'm not sure I like this as much as anything else I've ever heard. So that was... Now, on the other hand, I kind of like said, oh, well, I'm going to listen to it. Because the 90s for me were the worst decade of music, period. And it seemed like Kiss just decided to fall into it. That's kind of the way I felt. Because at that point in the 90s, what was that, 94? Our...
That was 95 that it came out, but I think it was originally going to come out in 94.
Yeah. So I'm already thinking that I can't stand any of the music of this decade because I've said it before. It's all boy bands. It's all either grungy, Pearl Jammy. I have no positive music feelings about the 90s for whatever reason.
Yeah. Maybe outside of Pantera, you know.
Okay.
But even then, I mean, that's a really acquired taste. That's a heavy.
It is. It's super heavy. So, for me, anyway, I like Walk. I'm so mainstream. It's pitiful on that stuff. But yeah. So, if ever I felt a negative moment listening to a Kiss album for the first time, that was definitely it. I didn't have that feeling with The Elder. Didn't have it with Dynasty. And when I sat down and I played all of the first seven albums, would that be seven through Love Gun? There was not one album that I put on that I felt like was not a great album. Now,
right.
Of course, at that age and you hear Great Expectations, you're like,
yeah.
Did you hear what he said?
Yeah, he's talking about movies or whatever. Yeah.
So. You know, that's one of those memorable things where it's like, I don't know if my mom should hear me listening to that. So. But,
yeah, I mean, I remember listening to, you know, the first Kiss record and then understanding, hey, Hotter Than Hell sounds a little different.
Like, I agree with that, but I still loved it.
I didn't know enough to be able to put my finger on. This is produced differently, the way they mix it's different, right. or whatever. And I knew that Dress to Kill was different,
yeah.
Because it was a little more poppy, a little more bouncy, I guess, in the way the arrangements were. And you know, Kiss is, here's what I always think online when I'm reading all these people saying Kiss should do this, Kiss should do this, or Kiss should do that. Kiss has never done what you expect them to do.
That's correct. Or what you think they should do.
They've always sort of done. Have they caught themselves behind trends at times? Absolutely.
All the time.
You know, I don't know if if there's been a lot of times where you would say Kiss was the trendsetter on this, other than the stage show and that stuff. But musically, talking about the music they play, but that's always been them. I mean, what two albums can you compare? Maybe Lick It Up and Animalize would be the two more similar albums.
Okay.
I mean, you think, all right, so Hotter Than Hell is very different than Kiss. Dressed to Kill is different from Hotter Than Hell. Destroyer is different than Dressed to Kill. Rock and Roll Over was just a straight-ahead rock album. Love Gun was not as heavy as Rock and Roll Over, right?
True.
Then Dynasty is completely different. Unmasked was, yeah, okay, you could sort of make those two sister records, right? Dynasty and Unmasked. But Unmasked was still a very different record. It was a lot more poppy.
Right.
It wasn't very disco-y.
But I do group those together. I mean,
I do too.
When I think of groups of Kiss albums, I think of the first three or four, however you want to, if you want to include Alive.
I do too, but they're very different records, though.
Yeah.
But you only group those together because of Alive, and then you group the second three together because of Alive too.
Maybe so, but I do group them together,
and then right.
and then I group Unmasked and Dynasty. You're absolutely right.
And The Elder sort of gets lumped in with Creatures of the Night because you don't want it there by itself,
right? And I I think of Killers when I think of those. I for whatever reason, I pull Killers back into the Dynasty Unmask Killers trio because it sounds like an evolution. You know, they did the Dynasty thing. They kind of became more poppy but more rock. And then Killers was, to me, where they were supposed to go and wound up doing The Elder. So, and then you wind up, you know, as Creatures alone. Or is Creatures fall into, to me, Creatures and Lick It Up are diverse. Nothing alike.
And then that's why I say Lick It Up, maybe Animalize, but they're still very different. Asylum was different than Animalize. Crazy Nights was different from Asylum. Hot in the Shade was different from Crazy Nights.
See, I kind of partnered Asylum and Animalize.
There was a record between those. Asylum came between those.
Came between which ones?
Animalize and Crazy Nights.
Correct. Crazy Nights would be after that. Crazy Nights and Hot in the Shade go together for me.
Maybe. I think Crazy Nights was just a lot slicker. I think Crazy Nights has better songs overall. I think Hot in the Shade has peaks and valleys, but there's a lot of valleys for me.
And you know, for Hot in the Shade, I never thought of that as a negative. I never thought of it as just playing demos.
I didn't either. I just thought it was too long and there was too...
Well, if anything, I can recall going, man, this has a lot of songs on it. And it didn't bother me. A lot of people say, well, would the album have done better if it had been a couple of tracks taken off of it? I don't know. I mean, I seem to like tracks on there that... not a lot of people like. Because a lot of people don't like that album.
I just think there's a lot of mediocre stuff on there. This is not their best hour. But it was great that you had Eric singing a song. It was, I think there are some decent songs on there. As a listen, it really doesn't take you anywhere. Whereas even like the records that I'm not huge fans of, you know, like a Crazy Nights, there's sort of a flow to the songs and it works.
I agree.
Hot in the Shade was just like an amusement park ride that after it's over, you just go,
Katie Spencer.
Okay, I did that. All right.
It's 15 songs, certainly a variety of songs. And I guess that's where I understand where people are kind of like, these are just a bunch of demos because there is no, kind of like you said, it doesn't, a lot of the songs maybe sound like they don't belong together or whatever the case. But
have they ever addressed that? Why that's the way it is?
No.
I've read a lot of stuff, but I can't remember ever reading why Yeah, I mean, I know that was a weird time for them, and
yeah. So, Chris Sinzak, we need you to get a hold of Bruce Kulick and do an album's Unleashed for Hot in the Shade, please.
Yeah, that'd be great.
But there are some great tracks on Hot in the Shade, in my opinion. I actually go back to some of those every once in a while. So, and of course, you got Forever, which, I mean, which is what, their third biggest hit, second biggest hit.
Which was a weird song. I mean, I remember when that song just hit, and it was like, wow.
Yeah.
I mean, they're back on top again. They were. It was kind of crazy. It was a crazy time for them to just explode back, and Forever was everywhere.
Yep. Yep. So just kind of finalizing the topic, I mean, we started out with, or I started out saying, in any case, that rather than two eras of exit for a lot of Kiss fans, that I felt like there potentially were four. And I guess, I mean, you can certainly dilute that thought by saying, well, there weren't any fans when Carnival Souls came out anyway. You just basically had the core Kiss fans to begin with. So who really exited at that point? But you can kind of back up and say, well, I've heard people speak on that, yeah, when Destroyer came out, or when I heard Destroyer, I think it's a horrible album, it didn't belong there. The production that Bob Ezrin made them do with the orchestration and all the stuff that's put on that album after the rawness of the first four albums, and certainly the elevation of Kiss Alive, was the wrong thing to do, and I just didn't like it. So that's, I've heard, you know, a lot of people say that, and that's why this kind of sparked this conversation was, okay, well, there's a lot of talk about, you know, Dynasty and The Elder, but do we ever talk about Destroyer and Carnival Souls as being exits? So that was today's topic. I hope we didn't drag it out and get too boring about it. But we don't normally do topics either. So maybe you left 35 minutes ago. Who knows?
Well, maybe. If you did, don't let the door hit you on the... If you're too old, if it's... Wait, too loud, you're too old, whatever. I'm trying to do my Paul Stanley.
If you're too old, you can't remember anymore. So there you go. That's kind of what happens. But anyway.
Chime in on Facebook and tell us what you think about this.
Absolutely. We would love to have you do that.
Say we're idiots. Like David Cathy did when we said, no, he didn't say we're idiots.
I think he said, I hate to burst some of your bubbles.
Yeah, I mean, we don't even have bubbles, do we?
And he, I don't even think he technically directed at us. He just simply said it. And
well, a lot of people,
you and I both immediately go, oh, yeah, you're right.
A lot of people were saying that, and it's easy to get off because, you know, I think Kiss only played two shows in 94, the Blaze Fest in Chicago and in Nashville, which we were both at that show. They had Fleetwood Mac open up, which was a weird thing, but and that was a weird time for Fleetwood Mac, too. But
it was. I would agree.
Kind of neat to see Fleetwood Mac in that sort of time period.
It was in the middle of the darkness of the crappy music of the 90s. Didn't we have Brother Kane on that one too?
Pat Travers and somebody called Mother Station. I've got their CD somewhere here. Okay. And
I don't know. Was Brother Kane,
all right.
Was Brother Kane there or am I just
reading? Yeah, Brother Kane was there.
Okay. I think I'm just reliving a Dream Theater concert I went to where Brother Kane opened.
What a weird combination.
It was one of those like KDF rock shows, birthday rock shows or something where they had like four or five bands. And I actually went to it. And then I think my wife said, are we actually going to stay and listen to all this Dream Theater crap? I think I did, actually. Not that it's crap. It's very talented. It's just, again, the darkness for me of the 90s. So, couple things to mention. If you haven't seen Kiss, go see Kiss. If you want,
are they on tour? Or are they just playing some one-offs?
If you want to see Tuck and I at Kiss, where are you going to see them? Where?
Hi. So I'm trying to get my children, since it's the last time they're ever going to go. So let me ask you this real quick before I answer the question. are you buying into this is the that was the last time they're ever playing Chicago?
You know, so it's not possible that it's the last time they play New York. So as far as, you know, because they're playing Madison Square Garden here in a week or two.
Right. There's no way you're not ending it at in Madison Square Garden.
I agree with that.
Or somewhere in New York City. So, I mean, it may not be Madison Square. It may be Yankee Stadium or something, but you're not ending. You're not playing 3 years and getting New York City out of the way in the first couple of months.
Right. I agree with that. So maybe they're knocking out venues. Maybe they're not going to play Madison Square Garden again. Maybe they are, you know, maybe it's Central Park. Maybe it's the Yankee Stadium. Who knows? We'll see. But yeah, so I guess I'm treating it that way. It's kind of like, okay, they're not going to play United Center in Chicago again. Maybe they play Soldier Field. I don't know. So anyway, where were you going with that?
I was just thinking, you know, I'm trying to get my kids to go since this is the last time, you know, to Atlanta, trying to, you know, make that happen. I've got a 13-year-old daughter. Okay. So you can imagine how difficult this is. I've got a 19-year-old son who's kind of cool with it. So, so I'm looking at Nashville, Atlanta as the two shows that I probably will be at. You know, there's a chance I don't know, maybe some other shows, but those are the two that I'm looking at immediately here.
Well, so I've seen a lot of families at these shows already. I see parents bringing their younger kids. I see, I had a couple next to me the other night that she had never seen Kiss, and she just started dating this guy, and he was a lifetime fan. And basically the whole entire time they were sitting next to me, I heard him talk about Kiss this, Kiss that. This is my history. This is, so I got to hear his life story. And at the end of the show, she goes, "All right, now I get to take you to one of my shows." And I turn to her and I go, "Okay, what would that be?" And she goes, "I'm just more bluesy." I said, "Okay, fair enough." Because I was just curious, because that was her final words after the show. And I'm thinking, that's what you have to say after you just saw that? But she had a good time. I watched her through the show. I look at the little kids, and a lot of the little kids get way bored into the show until they kind of start picking it up towards the end. And then you got so much going on constantly, and then you get into the confetti and all that stuff, and the kids have a great time by the time it's over with. But it's difficult for, I think, the 10 and 12-year-olds for 2 hours to get through the 100,000 years and, you know, some of those songs. But I do think when those families leave at the end of the night after all the confetti and the balloons and the explosions that they're going home going, yeah, that was pretty cool. But I don't
know. So my daughter loves like Taylor Swift and those, you know, those shows. Yeah. And I keep telling her, you know, you're going to understand where it came from.
Yeah, that's true. That's a great
point. This is the origin of, you know, she went and saw Taylor Swift, I don't know, it was last summer, I guess, in Atlanta in Mercedes-Benz. And that may be Taylor on the phone there.
That's the Kiss fax machine. That's the Kiss Talk office fax machine. Getting a fax
hot off
from
presses.
Gene.
Hey, so anyway.
Cease and desist for this podcast.
Do not ever mention Taylor Swift's name again. So anyway, I don't know. We'll see what happens with that. But looking forward to that stuff. And, you know, me and my wife have done that where she, you know, it was me on the bargaining end. I had to go see Prince. And it wasn't that I didn't like Prince. It was like one of those very experimental Prince shows.
Yeah.
Where, like, the show started at – the Prince show was very different. It was supposed to be Chaka Khan was supposed to be opening the show. But it was Prince came out – the band came out first, Prince's band, and they played. And then Prince came out and did some songs. And then Chaka Khan comes on and sings.
Wow.
And like in the middle, and then, but like they played like the opening to Purple Rain, and it seemed to go on for about 3 weeks. And it was just that, that mellow, and it was like, is he ever going to come back out?
Yeah.
What is the deal? And so I'd said to her, I said, look, you owe me. You owe me big time. And so that was repaid on a Motorhead show, which then she said, now you, I think you've, the debt now has been paid, but you still owe something because I just saw Motorhead. So whatever. I don't know if we've ever evened that up, but you know, the amount of shows I've drug her to over the years is, the music that she's had to endure that she doesn't like is beyond
right
measure.
So. I understand. So
anyway,
one more comment on, you were talking about, do I think this is the last of the last of whatever? So I think you and I've talked about this. If I've talked it on the show again, you guys get to hear it again. So there's got to be something left for next year, right? So what happens in year two of this tour? We already know what this year basically is. Next year, I mean, I've said, okay, they come back, they do the secondary markets, right? Secondary markets for us in the South are like Knoxville, Chattanooga, which gives us at least two more opportunities to hit a show that is, well, for you, it's your hometown, more or less. For me, it's another hour and a half drive for Chattanooga. So if you're talking about, you know, well, I want to take the kids because it's going to be the last time they play Atlanta or Nashville. Maybe they don't. Maybe you hold out and you wait for that secondary market swing. What do you think?
Well, you know, and if you remember the Lost Cities tour,
that's exactly what I'm referring to.
They, there were some bigger cities sort of splattered through there because Nashville was on the Lost Cities, I believe.
I don't remember
because they didn't have Bridgestone Arena built when the reunion tour. There was nowhere to play.
Huh.
In 96, there was nowhere to play.
Man, I think they did play, though.
And then they came back. They played Nashville in 97 when Bridgestone was finished.
That is something that I would need to check. Julian Gill, would you please look that up in one of your books for me and text that over to me?
but I believe that's the case. I'm trying to pull out a book
I've
here.
I've got Julian's books over here in the closet. I just got to reach. I can't get to my bookshelf and reach those.
All right, so let me see. What have I got here? But I believe that I remember that as the case, because I remember, you know, they were maybe it wasn't the Lost Cities tour. Maybe that's not what it was actually called.
Right.
But I remember Nashville was not on the first run of the reunion tour. Let's see here. So we're in 90. I just opened the book. I'm in 99. So let's see. So when was the first run? So, okay. So they played the first run of reunion shows. All right. According to this, the last show. Let's see, they're in Louisiana, they're in Dallas, Texas, then they go to Europe in November of 96, then they go to, they play a show in Nassau Coliseum, I guess that's December 29th, they play Hartford, Connecticut, they play in New Jersey, right there at the end of the year in 96. Then they go to Japan, New Zealand, Australia, Mexico, Chile, however you want to. Then by March, they're back in the United States. They play New Haven, Springfield, and Nashville was on April 6th. But it says they played Nashville Arena. Is that Bridgestone? That's not the Civic Center.
It is. The Nashville Arena was Bridgestone before it was.
Okay.
So, yeah, that is it. That is April 6th, yeah. And Power Man 5000 opened that show.
Yeah, Power Man 5000, Rob Zombie's brother.
Yeah.
Let's see. But you see, so I don't remember if that was the was that the Lost Cities tour? But you got Nashville, you got Jacksonville, then you got Fort Wayne, Grand Rapids, obviously not huge markets, Toledo, but then you got St. Louis, Topeka, Sioux Falls, and Minneapolis.
Yeah.
So you can see there were some big cities sprinkled through there that for whatever reason they hadn't played yet.
Yeah, I guess so. I'd have to take a closer look at this and see what they called that. But in any case.
Yeah, it was that sort of second run on the reunion tour where they came through the states. And obviously they were playing smaller markets.
Right.
But there were still some big markets sprinkled through there. Because I think you need those to pay the bills.
Well, that's a possibility, yeah. Yeah. So, but yeah, I definitely believe that next year, 2020, which if you look at the tour shirt, it says the tour is 2019 to 2020. It doesn't say anything about 2021. That they're going to hit everything basically they missed in the U.S., and then they're going to go back and catch the countries that they aren't catching after April 13th, because they leave the U.S. and they head to Europe. So they still got a lot of ground to cover. But, you know, there's another 60, 65 shows in the U.S. they could do. So, because a lot of people, you know, obviously are looking at this going, well, they're not coming to my city. So, anyway. So there's that. But I think that is basically where we've ended this show anyway. So we'll kind of pick that back up. But one of the things I do want to mention, this is the first time we've mentioned it in a while, is it is 2019. Happy 2019. And I hope all of you are at least attached to the Facebook page for the Nashville, Tennessee Rockin' Pod, which is August 9th and 10th of 2019. We intend on being back at that event. And we want you to come out and see us. So keep your eye on that Facebook page.
Yeah, I think Chris says they've got some guest announcements coming up pretty soon. And
yep.
It's going to be at the Airport Marriott.
Yeah, very much a change in venue. So I think if you want something bigger, better, more professional, more exciting, then check out where we're headed with this thing. I say us. Thanks, Chris, for doing all the work.
But it's just right around the corner from where it was, right? It's not far away. It's sort of in the same part of Nashville.
Yes, we were more at the Opryland property last year, and we're closer to I-40, right off the interstate, more or less.
Right.
So, but anyway, we invite you guys to start planning for that. Come see us. We want to see you. Come talk to us.
Hey, and we've got some big things planned on Classic Rock Drops, our sister podcast.
We do.
There's some big things coming up, some really stunning. Just keep your eye on that page for a while too.
Yeah. We're coming back with Classic Rock Drops. In case you didn't know, that Tuck and I have another podcast, which is our original podcast that's almost 2 years old. Although we did take a little hiatus to get this one off the ground, and we'll get back on track with that. Classic Rock Drops is a podcast that focuses on new music by the classic rock artists that you love, because they're out there still making new music and you don't have anywhere to hear it. So,
and we're going to come back with a vengeance on that show, because we've got a legend.
We do.
And that's all I want to say, a legend lined up.
Yeah, very cool. Not only just a legend, but something very exciting happening about that legend, and we're going to be talking to the man himself. So coming up soon, but that's today's show, and we appreciate you listening to us talk about Kiss, and we are, as I said on the first few shows, we're happy to have others of you talk about Kiss. I know that the reason I do this is because I need an outlet to talk about Kiss, and if you would like to be on the show or you have a topic you'd like to come talk to us about, we're more than happy to work it out where you can be on the show with us. So we invite you to do that. You can email me at kisstalkpodcast@gmail.com. Tuck, hope you have a great week.
You too, man. Take care.
Thank you. Kiss Talk is an Into Rock podcast production.